Welcome to the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast.
They're a bunch of guys who ain't never played the game, and they never got the girls in high school, and they just want to get in the game.
With your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
See, the thing is, you guys look at me, you see the backwards hat, the gray socks, the funky outfit, and you say, now this guy's a chump, am I right?
No, a geek.
Only on the VSIN Podcast Network.
Yeah, what's up? You heard it. We are the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast. Jonathan Von Tobel, Jacob Roach, alongside a little bit more of a normal setting this week. Was flying solo last week, but very excited for this week's episode. Nate Kreckman is going to join us at the second half of this podcast, host of Kreckman and Lindahl, Altitude Sports Radio 92.5. That was a little troublesome with altitude. Altitude Sports Radio 92.5 FM out in Denver, as we focus on the Denver Nuggets and Nikola Jokic and his MVP candidacy. Nate, very strong with the statistics and support for the Joker. And he made a very good argument. And look, there's a lot of good arguments to be made for a lot of these MVP candidates, but we will get to that throughout the show. We have a lot of headlines to get to, and what I think is an evolving and very intriguing MVP race. MVP race, most improved player race. I have six players on my list in contention for most improved player. Five of them have better resumes than the odds on favorite Jeremy Grant. We will get to that in a few minutes. But we'll start with the way we did the last show. A little bit of hardwood headlines as we go through some of the bigger stories that have happened over the last week or so. Two of them happening within the last 24 hours of this recording. This is happening on a Thursday, by the way, so happy March Madness for all those who are listening. I keep getting the question, too, by the way. I love this. This is part of a bigger topic personally, but it's like, are you going to watch any of the games? And it's like, yes, I'm going to watch college basketball. I actually still enjoy college basketball. It's worse than the NBA in terms of quality of play, but I still watch college hoops. So yes, I'm going to watch the March Madness. Don't worry. Tip off actually for the first game of the first four is coming up about an hour and a half from now. And you don't really care if you're listening to this because you're listening to this like 6 hours after we recorded it. All right. So a couple of headlines to get through here. First up, Milwaukee Bucks go out and acquire one P.J. Tucker from the Houston Rockets. They're going to send D.J. Augustine, forward D.J. Wilson to the Rockets, for Tucker and forward, who I totally forgot about, Rodionis Krukus?
Rodionis Krukus is what I had yesterday pronunciation on.
Rodionis?
Yeah, okay. Rodionis.
I'll trust that. That actually kind of sounds like it is spelled. So, Milwaukee Bucks go and get P.J. Tucker. Houston is going to push back the 2022 first-round pick Milwaukee owes to the unprotected 2023 draft. Rockets get the right to swap their 2021 second-round pick for the Bucks' 2020 first-round pick, 2021, I should say, unless the Bucks somehow fall to 1-9, according to this report. So, initial thoughts on P.J. Tucker going to the Milwaukee Bucks, because my initial thought was, okay. Like, it's a team that I think P.J. Tucker helps them defensively, right? If you look at some of the numbers, especially when Giannis comes off of the floor, Giannis, when he is on the floor, their defensive rating right around 107. When he's off the floor, it inflates to about 120. P.J. Tucker is going to help in that regard. Their bench, while we could make the argument that potentially there is some talent there offensively, it is very clear that Milwaukee, from a defensive standpoint, with their depth, has fallen off from where they were the last few years. So I think he fits somewhat of a need. I think there's a lot of questions about Tucker in terms of being the corner three-point specialist that he was with James Harden, right? He got a lot of credit for that. But this year, the shots have not been falling at, we will say, the exact same rate as they have in the past. Three-point shooting overall this year, P.J. Tucker, 32%, 27 of 84, so not a large sample size. The corner three-point shooting, which, by the way, like, quietly, this is always something that is stuck in the back of my mind. If you think of P.J. Tucker, you think of the corner three. Last year, 28% from the corner. The year before that, 34%. The year before that, 31%. So he's considered a three-point specialist from the corner, but, like, statistically, it hasn't really panned out. But I don't think it's there for the shooting, right? He is a switchable guy. You know, he's used to that, right, the switch-all system that he's been in there with Houston. The Milwaukee Bucks, by all accounts, and you can see it when you watch them, are trying to switch a little bit more, especially the off-ball stuff. It's trying to help them out in terms of one of the biggest flaws of their defense, the fact that they have refused to switch at times, almost to the point where it's stubborn and it leaves shooters open, especially on pick-and-pops, and that's how they've been burned in years past. So generally, I like the acquisition of P.J. Tucker. I think it's a general positive. Is it going to shift the odds for the Milwaukee Bucks? No. Is it going to make me think any more or any less of the Milwaukee Bucks? No. But it is a signing that doesn't make them worse. A signing, trade, and an acquisition that does not make them worse and makes them a little bit better in certain regards. What do you think?
I think the most interesting aspect is what's going to happen to Olin Depot now that the fire sales kind of started in Houston. That's what I'm most interested to see from this trade. Like, is Victor going to move next? Is he going to move to a team that's trying to make a push or is in contention? I think the Knicks are like the one team that in my mind makes some sense for Olin Depot. They've got that Pistons early second round pick. That could be a good piece. With the Bucks, I mean, I think this kind of adds, like, when it comes to looking at the Sixers and the Nets, P.J. Tucker, I think, would be important in those series. Mm-hmm. So, for that standpoint, I do like that for the Bucks. You kind of clean out a little point guard depth with Drew Holiday, who struggles with injury. That would be my only concern. But all around, I think the Bucks, like, they made the right move here. And he should be able to find his shooting in a system that's, like, driven by Giannis. I think that will help as well.
Yeah, he brought up that game. Like, Jesus Christ, how bad was that game yesterday? watching a good chunk of that contest. 106 to 105 at overtime. Mm-hmm. That was not 106 to 105. The final score was 109 to 105. Yeah, that game sucked. That was every guy who says 90s NBA is the best. They should have had, like, a raging boner watching that game. 100%. By the way, Vegas, I will say this because, you know, it's March Madness. And this town, and I'm from here, and obviously I have a little bit more of a love and an infatuation with this town than you would because you're a new guy. But it's really cool to see this starting to get packed up again. You know, the traffic on the way here was a nightmare, but it's a good thing. The parking garage here at the D was packed.
Yeah,
it is loaded with people right now sitting around us getting ready for the tip-off that is set to happen. So it is great to see all of these sports books getting jam-packed with people who are coming in to spend their money and support our city. But, you know, it also leads to some very wonderful characters that are perusing the grounds. And not to put your people under an umbrella, but clearly this dude from Boston yesterday, I'm sitting at the Red Rock Sportsbook, and is just bitching the whole time about basketball, just complaining. You think this is good, but it's not. All this three-point shooting. Also, and he was kind of a piece of garbage. I couldn't really catch him because he was a little farther away. He did wish a plane to crash, one of the teams for their planes to crash on the way home because I guess, I don't know, he didn't cover the first half or something like that. So while I enjoy that people are out here, there are some very fascinating characters. But I'm assuming he loved everything that happened at that Bucks and 76ers game yesterday. That was bad. The Bucks yesterday were incredibly terrible. And it's funny because Giannis got a lot of them. We're going to get more on the MVP stuff. Giannis got a lot of MVP moment. I'm like, is the MVP moment when he was shooting 20% from the floor in the first half? Like, is that the MVP moment?
Yeah, is the MVP moment when he struggled with a team missing their MVP candidate?
Yeah, right, like, yeah. Needed overtime, and you only got 109 points. But regardless, so Bucks get P.J. Tucker, generally positive. I like your point that in a series with the Philadelphia 76ers, it does give them another switchable piece. On every possession, do you want him on a Joel Embiid? Hell no. But can you live with it on every once in a while possession if it's going to happen? You probably can. So poor P.J. Tucker gets acquired just so he can bang bodies with massive Joel Embiid once the playoffs start after he had to play center last year for the Houston Rockets. But a generally positive acquisition there for the Milwaukee Bucks. Other headline, of course, is that Miami has acquired Trevor Ariza from Oklahoma City. The Heat are going to send Myers Leonard in a 2027 second-round pick. So essentially, they're sending nothing. You have these conversations all the time. You hear this when you listen to GMs talk. A pick that far out, you're essentially acquiring it for free. Like, who the hell is going to be in the front office for Miami in 2027? We have no idea. So you're getting him for nothing. The Thunder, of course, send over Ariza. So what does this do for Miami in their push for the Eastern Conference? Because if you look at Miami from a statistical standpoint, this is a team that the one thing that sticks out to you when you evaluate them from this year to last year is their three-point shooting is not the same. You know, last year, the Miami Heat were a team that finished, and I'll double-check this, second in three-point percentage, 38.6%. Now this year, they are 25th, 35.1%. I think part of it, too, is, you know, the health and the lack of continuity, but they're still taking a lot of threes. The threes just aren't going down. Trevor Ariza doesn't really help that. Trevor Ariza, career 35% three-point shooter. He's a decent body along the wing. I still would have preferred a Harrison Barnes-type acquisition. I think he would have been freaking awesome for Miami. I don't think the door is entirely closed on that, even with the acquisition of Trevor Ariza. But I think this is also one of those, it's twofold, right? It's one, it's, you know, we need some wing depth. He's a switchable piece. We like to switch and play solid defense. He'll provide a little bit of that. The other is, let's get Myers Leonard the hell out of here.
Yeah, I think it's like, he's a Heat culture guy. Like, he could fit in. It's just kind of value added for nothing. So, like, you're not blown away, but you're like, yeah, it's another body. It's six more fouls if you need it. It's, yeah, it adds to the team, but nothing that moves the needle.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't really. So we got two trades up to this point, and we've had a couple of it. It's not like anything earth-shattering yet when it comes to the NBA. So trade deadline is about a week from today. Actually, I think it's exactly a week from today, mm-hmm. on Thursday, the 25th. And there's not, and the problem with this trade deadline too is there's not a lot of like crazy names that are available that will like swing the pendulum in one direction, right? Andre Drummond for the Los Angeles Lakers, potentially. You know what I mean? Also on the other side, right? When you're looking at other things, a Kyle Lowry potentially, which would be a massive piece for some teams, but the price for him, the cap hit for him, all of those things that go into it make him hard to acquire. So two moves up to this point. Again, it's Thursday, so as you're listening to this, maybe something comes down tomorrow or the next day. But that's what we had over the last 24 to 48 hours. You should also note, too, as you listen to this, in the win over the Rockets for Golden State, Steph Curry suffered a tailbone contusion third quarter Wednesday night, didn't return. Sounds like he's going to miss a game or two. So that's really actually worth pointing out here for a betting angle going forward as you're listening to this, because the Golden State Warriors without Steph Curry on the floor are trash, like straight-up garbage. If you look at some of the clean of the glass numbers with Steph Curry on and off the floor, and we've talked about this a lot, right? It was actually, I wrote about this in my piece, cases for, case and against for the MVP. Steph Curry off the floor this year, offensive rating for the Golden State Warriors, 95, and a net differential of negative 12.1. They got outscored by 12.1 points every 100 possessions without Steph Curry. Defensively, they might be able to keep themselves in some games, but I have no idea who's creating their offense for them if he's missing like two games.
It's already an offense that was kind of struggling, and now you take Steph out. I just feel bad for Steph because I just he always gets these injuries, and you know, adds to like the narrative that Steph is soft. But like his injuries, I mean, barring the ankle things early in his career, his injuries are never connected, so you can't beat up on him too bad. Mm. But that just it's a bummer because you know he's. I feel like he's gonna be a little stiff coming back too. This isn't. It's not like the end all be all injury, but anything that's in your tailbone, like that sucks.
Have you ever had a bruised tailbone?
No, I've taken a lot of hard hits on it, just like falling playing basketball. I've never had like a true bruised one. I don't think so.
I've had a bruised tailbone before. It was when I was actually really young. I used to be really into rollerblading, and I totally ate it like hard, and I bruised my tail. Dude, I couldn't sit. I couldn't walk. It was one of the worst. It's a very restricting pain. Like you can barely move. And look, I was like 9 years old. Okay. So, you know, the pain threshold of a 9-year-old versus an NBA athlete, probably the same. But it sounds like he's going to be done for at least two games. Maybe. I'm reading between the lines. But their next two games, at Memphis, it's a back-to-back set. The Grizzlies, you know, they're having some issues. They just did beat the Miami Heat, but still one of the better defenses in the NBA. I just gave you the offensive numbers for the Golden State Warriors without Steph Curry. Really fascinated to see what the market does from a power rating perspective on that two-game set if Curry's not going to be out. Because the initial thought is circle the Grizzlies to play them, but there's going to be a certain threshold. If we're talking about laying like 7 with the Grizzlies, I'm out. But if we're talking about laying in the range of like 3 to 4, you can get me in there.
Would you look at going under on those totals because of a bad offense?
You could. It depends on what the total is going to be, right? You know, shouldn't be much higher than 220, if that at all, just given the issues that the Golden State Warriors have offensively. But, yes, that would be the other angle as well because, again, who's your best shot creator outside of Steph Curry? Like today, you know, a lot of people got excited, and it was funny because a lot of people got excited after they beat the Utah Jazz. And I think it was Matt Eumanns who asked me, like, because they played, you know, the Lakers the next day, like, hey, you know, what do you think? Warriors a good spot to play here? I'm like, well, are you going to get 28 points and like 12 of 16 from Andrew Wiggins again tonight? Probably not. And the market kind of gets a little excited. The Lakers are only a 2.5-point favorite, and then they blow them out. Right, and a big part of that was their offense sucked, and the Lakers got to shut them down. So, again, circle those two spots. Memphis and Memphis back-to-back set. It looks like potentially Steph Curry is going to miss this. So Steph Curry, one of the MVP candidates. I think it's safe to say that Curry is in the elusive what we call conversation, but he's not going to win it. And so I think, personally, this race has been whittled down to 5 guys. There are 5 guys who can realistically win this thing. LeBron James, Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, James Harden, and Giannis Antetokounmpo. Now, I'm going to include Damian Lillard in this conversation briefly because there was a lot of Dame Dalla MVP talk after they came back from that massive deficit against the New Orleans Pelicans, which, dear God, by the way, you talk about a bleeping collapse. You could see it written all over their faces as the deficit was shrinking, and these kids, they're just like they just don't know what to do. They're like deer in a headlight. And then up 3, 2 shots at the free throw line. and an 88% free throw shooter in Brandon Ingram bricks both of them. You still have the ball because Bledsoe on the ensuing possession smartly fouls Lillard on the floor, and Nikhil Alexander-Walker turns it over. And the best part I saw in that, Jake, was after Alexander-Walker turns it over, the camera immediately goes to Stan Van Gundy, and he gets this look like, yep, that's what we've done this year. Like, and look, I love it. I got an under on the win total. Watching them lose has been absolutely fantastic. But holy, like, I don't know what to do with that team. They're so bad defensively. And I don't know if they're poorly coached. I don't know if they refuse to latch on to the lessons that Van Gundy is trying to teach them. But that's a nightmare in New Orleans, especially with the fact that we have expanded the tournament for you to potentially get in. They did it. So I'm sorry. Like, they did it so teams like New Orleans could get in. They want Zion Williamson in the postseason.
Oh, yeah.
They're not. They're in the danger of missing the play-in tournament.
I mean, like, the only reason that was a thing last year in the bubble was strictly trying to get Zion and the Lakers round one. That was the only reason that was invented. That turnover, that inbound play, that was like the most evident, like, this is a young team with no leader play. Like, and that's something like we talked about two episodes ago. Like, why have Steven Adams? Because, like, he's a veteran, quote unquote, but he can't help you in those situations. That's a situation where, like, if you still had Jrue Holiday, you wouldn't be there.
Well, and, like, even on the inbounds play, it was pointed out on the broadcast properly that the play clearly designed was Bledsoe was supposed to scream down the sideline in front of the inbounder, and then Alexander Walker was going to come in on the open space and take it. But Bledsoe stops for a second, and Alexander Walker's like, am I getting this or are you? And then Bledsoe clears, and they try to inbound, and they turn it over. But to your point, it's like, I hate personally the conversations of like leadership and mentality, because I have no idea what goes on in those locker rooms. None of us do. But at the same time, like, they just seem so much like a rudderless ship. Like, it's absolutely incredible. But anyway, we get sidetracked on that because Damian Lillard after that game, there was a lot of MVP talk for Damian Lillard. And I will say this right now. I wrote about it 2 weeks ago during the break. There is, and you won't change my mind on this, there is not a single MVP candidate that has a better anecdotal case for MVP than Damian Lillard. In that, guy takes over for team that loses two best players, keeps them above water, still in contention for a top four seed in the Western Conference, of all conferences, right? And still can, by the way, surpass their win total with a relatively solid second half. So, like, anecdotally, I don't think there's any better storyline than what Damian Lillard has done up to this point. But from a statistical standpoint, I think there's a lot of hills for him to climb to surpass a lot of these guys. But he's included on this list because that was part of the conversation. But I wanted to touch on this briefly because the last time we had the podcast, since then Joel Embiid has been injured. And Joel Embiid can potentially be out up to 3 weeks. And if he misses all 3 weeks that was reported for the timeline, that is 25% of the regular season that he will miss. Remember, it's 72 games.
Yep.
So it's exactly 25% of the season that he's going to miss. On top of a condensed schedule in the second half that all of these teams are going to go through, and you would think that they are going to be very cautious with the hyperextended left knee of their big man who is oft injured on back-to-backs, on 5-game and 7-night situations, on 11-game and 18-night situations. I'm going to double-check my schedule breakdown to see if they have any of those. But this opens the door a lot for all of these guys, not just my dude, James Harden, but for all of these guys. And even the Westgate moved him as low as 10-1, Joel Embiid, to win this. Since been adjusted to about 7-1. But this, an already fascinating MVP race has just, like, somebody just dropped a bomb and it put a cover over it and boom, and it exploded. And now we have all of this that is wide open for people.
Does it also hurt the Embiid case that the Sixers are, like, playing well with his absence? Like, no factor.
I don't really buy into, like, a lot of that kind of stuff. Like, the Sixers are number one overall seed for a reason, right?
Yeah.
Like, Embiid is solid. And, like, look, by the way, they're playing well, but, like, let's take this all into account. They beat the Spurs. Garbage.
Yep.
They beat the Knicks. Okay. Congrats, right? The Knicks, who I think are due for some regression, and, you know, there was a really low-scoring, crappy game that they played in there as well. And then in the Bucks game, which, you know, I laid 5 with the Bucks and ultimately didn't get there, in the second half, that's what I handicapped, right? Mm-hmm. The third quarter where Giannis and company are just running up and down the floor, scoring at will, doing whatever they want, coming back from a 17-point deficit. Like, that was the real matchup there. They had a really crappy first half. But I don't think we should get it twisted that they're playing well, when in reality, if you look at it, like, with some nuance, I think you kind of see that they're a team that's kind of just treading water at this point, you know?
Yeah, I think that, like, you and I look at it like that, but I don't think – a lot of the voters don't have that. Like, I would say the voting pool doesn't have that break down eye, and they look at surface level stuff like that. So that's the only reason I thought about like that case hurting them. I actually think his absence could help some portions of the Sixers. Like Ben Simmons gets to explore some different things. Amal Shaw asked me the other day, like, who do you think is coming out of the East? And I, with a lot of confidence, I said Philly, because I just really think this might be outlandish to say, but I think depending on Durant's status and Davis's status, I think Simmons and Embiid would be the one best, could be the one, the best 1-2 punch in the league, depending on the status of Durant and Davis.
In the league or in the Eastern Conference?
In the league, depending on, like, okay. If Davis is out and Durant's out, like, I think they're the best 1-2 punch.
I would throw Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo in that mix.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Butler's been playing absolutely out of his mind. And he's another one. It's funny. Anytime someone goes on a stretch, it's like, MVP conversation. Like, I don't even know what a conversation is. Sure, we'll throw Jimmy Butler in the conversation. He's not winning.
Yeah.
Like, I hate to say that, but – and it's not – it's no fault of his own. You know, he missed time with COVID. Mm-hmm. It's well over a quarter of the season that he's missed. That just can't happen. Philly, by the way, has 7 back-to-backs left as of today. Obviously, yesterday was the second leg of back-to-back against Milwaukee. It was also, by the way, their 5th game in 7 nights. But April 4th against Memphis, April 10th at Oklahoma City, April 22nd at Milwaukee, May 3rd at Chicago, May 8th versus Detroit, which will also be the 5th game in 7 nights, and then May 14th near the end of the season against Orlando. So again, you would think that maybe 1, 2, 3, all of those, Joel Embiid, once he comes back, is going to miss. Again, if they're cautious. So it really puts a damper on this. So you talk about the odds, right? LeBron James now across the board the favorite. DraftKings plus 160, FanDuel plus 155, BetMGM plus 140, William Hill plus 120. Behind him is Nikola Jokic. We're not going to spend a lot of time on him because Nate Kreckman's going to be with us, and he's going to talk about that and give the case for Nikola Jokic. But 2-1 for Jokic, plus 220 at both FanDuel and BetMGM. 3-1 at William Hill is the best spot number I could find on him. And then Embiid, as we talked about. But then we get into the double-digit guys, and both of them have a very, very realistic case to do this. And it's very fitting that we come into record today fresh off of a 40-point, 10-rebound, 15-assist night in a win over the Indiana Pacers for James Harden and the Brooklyn Nets. And I don't know if you've seen, but my message, all right, Mike Golic Jr., you're probably not listening, who had the audacity like 2 weeks ago to say, I'm the conductor of the James Harden MVP train, to which I responded, if you are, I built the damn train, okay? All right? Skip Bayless. Move over, LeBron. James Harden should be right in the middle of the MVP race now without Kyrie and KD. Harden just went for 40, 15, 10. We reversed the rebounds and assists. Come on, Skip. With 2 steals as the Nets won at Indiana. By the way, and again, this should be noted, against Indiana, 14 points and 4 assists in the fourth quarter. 2 games ago against Detroit, 12 points in the fourth quarter, scored the final 8 for the Brooklyn Nets to lead them past them 195. So I was texting with Mitch Moss to follow the Money, Fame, and Fortune yesterday. And we were talking about the fact that, like, he's still, if you can find, Harden. 14-1, 13-1, somewhere in that range. It's slowly starting to shrink. FanDuel is the first book I have seen to move him to single digits at plus 950. But the ignorance around his case for MVP, at some point, you can't ignore it. Mm-hmm. At some point, you're just sticking your head in the sand and refusing to see it because he has been incredible. I will use this word that someone tried to throw at me on Twitter earlier this week. The casuals will throw out Kevin Durant. He hasn't played at all. Kyrie Irving continues to be rested in certain situations because of his injury situation. He is a legitimate MVP candidate right now, and there is no denying it.
I think that Durant and Kyrie, I think it's more of a testament to Harden that he plays with Durant and Kyrie and he runs the team. Like, he showed up a couple games into the season and said, hey, we're going to kind of restructure this thing. I'm going to run it, and we're going to be better for it. I think that only helps his case.
Good.
Yeah, it's a one-case scenario where having great players on teams actually might help that case.
But here's the thing. One of those great players hasn't even played.
Yeah.
that's the problem, right, is the fact that if people want to use that against him, they realistically can't. And here's the other thing that we'll just throw into the mix here. The Brooklyn Nets right now are 28-13. You know what the record was when they got James Harden? 7-6.
Ooh.
I just don't know how. Like, my whole thing now is it's not even so much that he has to win the award anymore, Jacob. It's you, like the collective you, just need to admit he has a legitimate case at this point right now, because there's no denying the fact that he does. And, you know, yesterday was a really good day. Again, we're recording this on Thursday. was a really good day for a lot of these MVP candidates, right? Giannis Antetokounmpo, 10 of his 32 points in overtime to pull the Bucks past the 76ers. I would argue that he was trash in the first half. The Bucks were entirely just trash in the first half, and that he dug the hole that he had to get himself out of. And then Nikola Jokic, really boring, but still a 12-point, 10-rebound, 10-assist, triple-double, and they beat the crap out of the Hornets yesterday. But, like, all of these guys, they have very legitimate cases around this. But down the stretch, now that Embiid is out, what's going to happen? And the LeBron thing is, because we haven't even touched on that, I don't know if they're just going to hand it to him. I don't know what it is. He's got, and this is going to be stupid, but it's an award that people vote on, so this is actually, it's not a statistical benchmark, but he's got no buzz, right? Like, there's nothing around
really
LeBron.
Quiet. Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's just nothing around LeBron at this point right now in terms of just traction, highlight reels, things of that, like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. A constant conversation around
not him. A lot of press conference stuff from him.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested to see how this is handled, but that's the update for the MVP race now at this point. But I want to focus on one last award before we get to Nate Kreckman, because I have slowly become a little bit more infatuated with the Most Improved Player Award. And this market overall, and just the definition of most improved. So this has become a topic of conversation, I'd say, in the last week. To reiterate for those who don't know where I stand, I have a ticket on Julius Randle at 22-1. I just dipped my toe into the water on Zach LaVine at 25-1 as well. So those are my two Most Improved Player tickets at this point. I mentioned at the top, there are six guys. I have six on my list that could potentially win it. And again, I'm not being facetious or doing stuff on purpose, you know, to have a hot take out there. I think five of them have a better case than Jeremy Grant. But let's go with Jeremy Grant, right? Because I think the problem with Jeremy Grant is, and I actually, it's funny, I had another conversation online. I love having conversations online. It's fun to get other people's opinions. It just sucks because, like, texting essentially is not the greatest format for debates.
Yeah.
But, like, one guy, I'm a big Reddit guy. I don't know if you know this. Reddit's awesome. And in the sports book and the sports betting subreddit, I was talking about, somebody had asked, hey, what do you think about most improved player? And I was like, I got Randle at 22-1. And immediately someone's like, you're a moron. He's got no shot. He's only averaging, what did he say, 1 point or like 2 more points per game. And it's like, well, you realize that there is more than one indication to measure improvement than just points per game. But a lot of people are going to look at Jeremy Grant and go, wow, 11.4 points more per game? This guy's great. He's improved dramatically. But here's the problem. He's the best player on a garbage team.
Yeah.
And so his shot attempts are up. His volume is up. His usage is up. So his points are up. But his efficiency has tanked. To go through this really quickly, Jeremy Grant usage rate up essentially 10%. Points up 11.4 points per game. Field goal attempts, he's taken about 9 more per game. But field goal percentage down 4.4%. 3-point percentage down 3.5%, 2-point percentage down 5.5%. And by the way, these are all down from the year prior, because if you go through Jeremy Grant's career, like especially the 3-point shooting, he's had close to 40% 3-point shooting years. Like that's an improvement. He's taken a massive step back with that. But 2-point percentage down 5.5%. Overall effective field goal percentage down 5.4%. His assists are up. Assists are up 1.7 more per game. Assist rate overall up 7.4%. But his points per shot attempt, the metric you can find over at Cleaning the Glass, down by 5.6 points every 100 shot attempts. All, again, the efficiency is down. And then you compare it just with the guy that I'm talking about, right? Julius Randle. His points are up only by 3.8 points per game. But field goal attempts are up by 1.5. Field goal percentage is up by 2%. 3-point attempts, he's taken 1 more per game. 3-point percentage up by 13.8% this year. 2-point attempts, only 0.5 more per game. That's down slightly, 1.1%. Effective field goal percentage overall, 4.4%. And to me, the greatest measure of Julius Randle's improvement as a player, as he is now the focal point of the New York Knicks, assists per game, over 2.5 more per contest this year. Assist rate up nearly 10%, and his points per shot attempt plus 9.5 per 100 shot attempts. Randle has improved in every single one of those statistical categories. Literally everyone except for one, and that would be his 2-point percentage, which is down 1.1%. So to me overall, just Randle has a better resume than Jeremy Grant. And then we have, what's fascinating about this is, then you have the fly in the ointment that is Chris Wood, who comes back yesterday, right, and plays for the Houston Rockets. I don't know how much missed time is factored in for some of the voters on most improved, right, because does it matter? Is it an MVP thing? What that means is going to be fascinating. But you have Chris Wood, Jaylen Brown, Zach LaVine, and I will throw you my mystery fighter. Do you know who my mystery fighter is?
Give me the position, and I'll guess.
Shooting guard.
Oh, wow, that wasn't My guess was going to be DeAndre Ayton.
It's not DeAndre Ayton, no.
Shooting guard, Lu Dort.
No.
Nah.
Not Lu Dort.
I'm a big Dort guy.
This guy has a usage rate that's up 2.5%, essentially. He's averaging almost 4 points more per game, 3.7. He's taking about 2 more field goal attempts per game. Overall field goal percentage up only by 0.5%. But 3-point attempts, taking 1.1 more per game, and he's up about 5%. His 2-point percentage is down by about 2.5%, but overall effective field goal percentage is up by 2.1%, and his points per shot attempt up by 2.8 points every 100 shot attempts. He is 250-1, and he is Norman Powell.
Ooh, that's a good one. You know, I was Keith Smart.
Mm-hmm.
He had a great tweet. He said, "Why would you spend money on Oladipo this summer when you get Norman Powell?" And like, I was like, "Wow, you're right.
Right.
Norman Powell is so good. That's a good one." He fits what I would consider a most improved player. Like, when you go to, like, the what matters in a most improved player, Norman Powell is a most improved player. Like, C.J. McCollum won it. He was a most improved player. And this was, like, the fogginess of what the definition is. I thought Brandon Ingram last year was not a most improved player. It should have been Bam. It should have been Sabonis. Norman Powell's a great call at 250-1.
So 250-1. And then, like, there's others. Like, Zach LaVine, for example. Like, Zach LaVine, when somebody pointed this out to me and I went through and looked at his profile – like, you realize from an offensive standpoint, like, he's incredible. The field goal percentage up by 8%, the 3-point percentage up by 6%, the 2-point percentage up by nearly 10%. His points per shot attempt leads this entire pack. He's averaging 18.9 points more per 100 shot attempts this year. Zach LaVine. Like, his numbers are eye-popping. They're incredible. But, like, every single one that we have listed off here, right, and haven't even got a chance to go through Chris Wood's numbers specifically or Jaylen Brown's, who I'll ask your opinion on, like, out of all of these guys, Jeremy Grant consistently across the board is worse in his shooting percentages, and yet we're talking about minus 200 to win the award? Get out of here.
The other thing that's ridiculous is, like, the other five candidates you laid out, all of their improvements have impacted winning.
Right.
Grant's hasn't. That was, like, my big tell on Grant. He's not improving the team with his improvement.
And that's a really good point that I didn't think about. Julius Randle, obviously, leading the Knicks potentially into the postseason. Christian Wood, they lost him to an injury. They lost 17 straight games. Jaylen Brown helped the Celtics tread water while Jason Tatum.
What's his face?
I've had a brain fart really quick. But as Jason Tatum dealt with COVID and he wasn't playing, right? And Kemba Walker has been just, you know, whatever, Kemba Walker. I think, by the way, your boy Jaylen Brown, maybe you can speak more to this. I feel like he's like a third place guy. I don't know if he's going to win it.
Oh, I don't think he should win it. I think I said this before, like, because his isn't like a drastic jump. He makes the same size jump every offseason. It's just kind of compounded to, like, wow, Jaylen Brown's a really good player now. Third place I think is fair. He's almost been in the league too long at this level for me to, like, even put him in contention when I'm looking at, like, my credentials for most improved.
Yeah. So, I think this is really fascinating in terms of the race for most improved, what it means, right, for voters and how they perceive most improved, I think is obviously something that is extremely subjective. But I do think that, I was talking to Gil about this the other day, there's an argument to be made that most improved is actually one of the easiest parameters to set. Mm-hmm. How have you improved?
Yeah.
And statistics are the ones that bear that out. And statistically, while Jeremy Grant has improved in a couple of areas, Julius Randle, Chris Wood, I have, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I have 12 statistical categories here. Julius Randle has improved in all but one. Guy like Chris Wood has improved in all but 2, 3. Jaylen Brown has improved in all but 1, 2. There we go. Zach LaVine has improved in all but 1. And our mystery fighter, Norman Powell, has improved in all categories but 1. And again, like, pick any of the other 5 that you want to win this award. My whole point is, as a bettor, when you look at the market of most improved, Jeremy Grant should not be the odds-on favorite, and that creates value throughout the entire board, wherever you want to go. So I'm really excited about this. I think I'm in a relatively good spot. Obviously, you know, Randle at 22-1, which you should have had, is a pretty good ticket now that he's in the range of like 2-1. But I just think that from a standpoint of who's going to win this thing, it's going to be incredible. And the MVP race, too. So I think next week I'll dive a little bit more into the profiles for Defensive Player of the Year. I'm really excited about that, what that's going to mean. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we have Rookie of the Year, which, by the way, look this up real quick. Let me get my numbers really quickly.
I think I know where you're going.
Where?
Anthony Edwards making a push?
Hell no.
Oh, what are you going with?
What am I going with?
I mean, besides LaMelo.
Let me clear my throat really quick. All right. 28 points, 12 rebounds, 2 assists, 6 of 10 from 3-point range, 8 of 14 from the floor overall. Give you a couple of other numbers really quickly. Hold on. That sounds pretty good, though, right? Sounds pretty good. Let's see. Ooh, let's look at the month of February. Let's see what you've been doing lately. How about, let's see, this month alone, 13.8 points, 37% from 3-point range, 93% free throw shooter. No guess, huh?
I got one.
Who?
Is it your preseason boy?
Sadiq Bey, dude. Sadiq Bey's been absolutely incredible, bro. 28 points yesterday against the Toronto Raptors, helped him win, 57% from the floor. I think I hit it on the head that he was going to be a damn good player. He's probably not going to win Rookie of the Year. But there's like, you know, a couple of places like don't even have Sadiq Bey listed as Rookie of the Year, I think. I was trying to look the other day, and look, he's probably not going to win the award, but he damn well better finish second because he's been absolutely freaking incredible.
Yeah, it's the one good thing about Detroit. Like, it's the one thing I can smile about in the
Pistons
in the whole city of Detroit, I think.
Yeah, he's better than their higher draft pick right now, and Killian Hayes has been hurt. Not really exactly fair, but all right. Hardwood Handicapper Podcast. Remember, please rate, review, subscribe to those of you who have that I have seen, of course. Rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Very much appreciate that. We hope that you have gotten everything that you like out of this one. On the other side, Nate Kreckman is going to be with us. Nate, of course, I guess I would call him a good buddy of mine. We don't really hang out because he lives in Denver, and I only hung out with him one time when he was out here for the Mountain West Conference Tournament a couple years ago. But Kreckman, of course, host over at Altitude Sports Radio, 92.5 FM in Denver. He's going to give us the case for one Nikola Jokic for MVP, and, of course, the Denver Nuggets and their overall portfolio, why they've been struggling defensively, and what the future holds for them in competing for an NBA Finals title this season.
This is the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast. Interact with the show on Twitter at @MeJVT, at @Roach_97, and at VSIN Live.
All right, joining us now here on the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast, Nate Kreckman is nice enough to give us some time, host of Kreckman and Lindahl. Lindahl? Is that your pronunciation, host?
Lindahl.
There you go. All right, want to make sure he gets all the proper credit. Altitude Sports Radio, 92.5 out in Denver. So, there's a lot to get to, NBA-wise. I also have a couple NFL questions for you because I might have taken a stab on the Denver Broncos because of rumors around Deshaun Watson, but we'll get to that. I wanted to go to, I think, a topic that has been really fascinating this season, Nate, and I think it's one of the deeper MVP races that we have seen in a really long time. And I was going through your Twitter account the other day, and I liked this one. Damian Lillard, the only acceptable MVP alternative to Nikola Jokic. So walk me through the Lillard, because look, I actually wrote about this the other day. I actually think, like, anecdotally, Lillard has the best case out of, like, all of these guys. But, like, statistically, you can kind of quibble with it. But, you know, I was assuming that was right after the Pelicans game, right?
Yeah, it was in the midst. I might have been caught up in the moment a little bit of what was happening. But when a guy goes for 50 on 20 shots, when his team is down 17 with 6 minutes to play and comes back and wins, you tend to get a little bit caught up. But that's just – that's Lillard and what he does. Some of this comes from the inferiority complex that we feel here in the Mountain Time Zone, is that Jokic is getting overlooked because of geographic and media market reasons. Now, again, you can quibble with a whole bunch of that. We've had MVPs in Milwaukee and Oklahoma City, multiple MVPs in those towns in the last decade. So fair enough, but we know that Denver gets overlooked as an NBA destination. I think Portland, it's even more so than that. My biggest issue with the current MVP race isn't that Embiid is getting a ton of love, which he deserves, even though he's banged up now, and now his odds have really dropped. It isn't even that Harden is getting the kind of love that he is, although there's issues for why James Harden absolutely should not be the MVP this year. But to me, this should be a two-horse race between Lillard and Jokic. I don't get LeBron. I don't get LeBron in this whole thing. And he's having a great season. He's not the MVP. He's not even close to being the MVP right now.
Yeah, well, and I think LeBron thing comes from last year, right? It comes from the bubble run and
yep.
and him being upset about it. And so you go into the season with these preconceived notions that, hey, a guy is going to compete for an MVP. Look, it's why Luka Doncic is still like a top seven choice in terms of odds. Like, I kind of feel the same way about Luka. Like, I don't think Luka should be in the conversation. His first month and a half was awful. He came in out of shape, and he was contributing to the issues for his team. So let's focus on Jokic really quickly. And, you know, this is going to sound like a simplistic question. I know the case for it, but the case for Jokic is what?
Yeah. The case for Jokic is, and again, we're looking at LeBron at plus 160, mm-hmm. Jokic at plus 220. That was what I saw yesterday on BetMGM. The case for Jokic over LeBron, he's got him in scoring. He's got him in rebounding 11 to 8. He's got him in assists. He's got him in three-point shooting. Jokic is over 40% right now. LeBron at 36.5. Got him in field goal shooting. He's got him in free throw shooting. Jokic is shooting 87%. He's damn near a 50-40-90 season right now. It's got him in steals, so don't tell me about defense. Jokic is actually having a semi-competent defensive season. He plays more minutes, okay? If counting stats aren't your thing, well, he's got him in offensive rating. He has got him in offensive win shares. He's got him in total win shares. Effective field goal, box plus minus. VORP. You like VORP? He's got him in VORP. Hollinger's PER. He's having the 10th best season in NBA history right now, and he leads the NBA currently in that category. There's one difference. There's two differences. There's the media market, there's name recognition, and then there's the fact that the Lakers are three games up on Denver right now. And you know, this is a huge topic of conversation on our show, and we love to pull in national NBA voices on this topic. And what do we hear again and again? Winning, winning, winning. That's everything. Westbrook is the only MVP from a six seed in the last 20 years. Everybody else comes from a one or two seed. Okay, fair enough. They're three games back. They're three games back, and he's superior to LeBron in every single other category. So what else is missing here? What am I not getting? It's about narrative. It's not about what's happening on the court.
Yep. And I mean, his position doesn't help. And like, right, being a center, and like Embiid, of course, is having a fantastic year and he's at the front. But it's surprising that he has been at the front given the position that he plays. So here's my thing with Jokic, and you kind of alluded to it. You know, I would say that the biggest inconsistency with Denver overall has been them defensively, right? Like, at times they have really weird games, like the Atlanta game a couple weeks ago, the Dallas game where they're getting destroyed on pick and pops. And a lot of the times when I watch them, Jokic is at the center of those issues. I mean, look, he's a starting center on a team that's 30th in rim defense, right? If you look at some of the other defensive metrics, I think one that sticks out to me, their defensive rating gets better. Look at on the court, their defensive rating 114.3. When Jokic is off the court, it's 107. So when you hear those numbers and the defensive thing, that's my, like, yeah, I don't know if he's really the MVP. I think he's definitely top three, top two. That's what I have in terms of trepidation. What's your response to that?
Defensively, I can't really defend Nikola Jokic as a defender. Look, he's never going to be a rim protector. He is a center who is not a rim protector because he's mostly a below the rim big man, which I know the NBA, we don't have many of those left in the NBA. Although, he did dunk again last night, 23 dunks this year. It is a career high for Nikola Jokic. He's slimmer this year. He's more athletic this year than he has ever been. His body, it came in NBA ready. He got done with the bubble and he actually stayed in shape. He didn't have a full offseason to, quite frankly, get fat. And this has always been the knock against Jokic in previous seasons, is he will at times, and has always, either of a combination of being out of shape or being moody. Sometimes he just gets a little moody. He would put up these week stretches, 2 week stretches, sometimes month long stretches, where you were just like, what is wrong with him? And sometimes he just wouldn't shoot. Well, that's done. Guy averages 27 a game now. He knows he's the most important offensive player on his team. And it's outside of a couple of rare exceptions. And I know one of them was against the Lakers in LA. He has almost no bad games so far this year. Like, yeah, he only scored 12 last night. He also had 10 and 10 for a triple-double. It was just a boring triple-double last night from Nikola Jokic. Defensively, he is not elite. I cannot argue back with that, because we've griped about it as well. But he is becoming a much better team defender, and it also helps that Michael Porter Jr. is figuring out how to not be a black hole defensively.
Yeah.
And in turn, I think it's making the entire team a better defensive group. They've won 7 of their last 8. Their defensive rating is, I believe, right now, very respectable, 107.5. I think it's 7th in the NBA over that stretch. So it's at least of late not as dire as it may seem.
So I've actually been pretty clear about this too, because I've gotten into some conversations about it. If Nikola Jokic won it, I'd be like, cool, like totally get it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think there's like 4 guys where I'd be like, if you tell me he won this award, I'd be like, all right, yeah, it totally makes sense. So I'm not so much anti-Jokic as like, you know, when you're trying to sort out all 3 of these guys, all 4 of these guys, you know, you got to split hairs. So I don't know if you've noticed, I have been spreading my propaganda on James Harden. So you think he's out, huh?
You can't give an MVP award to a guy that went to a strip club maskless during a pandemic. Complete, not even just for the sake of either chicken wings or whatever other fun he wanted to have. It was done in the service of wanting to force a trade away from his team. That's problematic, okay? That is. And look, I don't even blame Harden for wanting to get traded from Houston. Yeah. The methodology was a bit questionable in my mind. He's having a marvelous season. If their 3 studs are healthy, they're probably winning a championship. I can't give that guy the MVP award this year. I can't. I just can't.
So I think, I don't know if you've noticed this at all and how much you've been tracking the betting markets, but there has been a movement on Jokic for 1 award, most improved. He is actually, his odds have all of a sudden started to plummet here over the last, like I'd say, week. He's now in the range of like 25-1 to win most improved. What do you make of that case? Because my thing was, like, a lot of people will point to his shooting, right? Well, he had a 40% year, like, what was it, like 4 years ago or something like that as a shooter. Like little things like that. He's done a lot of the stuff throughout his career multiple times. I think the biggest increase has been his scoring, which is up from like 20 to 27. But what do you make of him as now all of a sudden a most improved player candidate?
He was already awesome. He was second team All NBA. If you make the jump from second team All NBA, he was 2 years ago. He was first team All NBA. He'll be first team. Well, he should be first team again this year over Embiid as the center. That's not most improved player in the NBA category. Give that award to somebody else. He's better this year. He's not the most improved. He was already awesome.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I thought it's an interesting case when you look at it, but then you realize the other guys and what he's been. I think that ultimately holds him back for most improved. So let's talk about the team itself then now, because I think it's interesting to look at a team in Denver right now who is in the midst of a 7-1 run and ask you, like, what's up with them? Because they seem somewhat inconsistent. And look, the schedule's been relatively easy, right? 11 of their last 14 opponents, 500 or worse. Mm-hmm. A lot of them under 15th in terms of net rating. So these inconsistent stretches, right? We're talking about the 2 losses to the Wizards, the loss to Atlanta, the loss to Dallas. It didn't look particularly close. So what is with this team and those kind of performances where I'm watching them, especially again defensively, and I'm like, let's go. Get it together, guys. Like, it's great that you go down and get a wide open 3 on a look, but then don't give it up right back on the other side within 4 seconds on the shot clock.
Yeah, you didn't even miss mention the national embarrassment that was that final play against Washington. That was the last game they lost before they won 7 out of 8, and that was absolutely miserable. A few things at play, and it's going to sound like I'm making excuses for this group. That really isn't what's going on here, but they've been decimated by injuries. Gary Harris is their best defensive player. Gary Harris was a guy a couple of years ago that we were looking at and saying, okay, like they got him locked up on a contract early. It looked like a good deal, roughly $17 million per. And we were just like, this is marvelous. This guy is turning into one of the better shooters that we have seen here. And he is by far the best on-ball defender. His body has just broken down on him. And so that's really, really frustrating. He is still out right now. God only knows when he is going to come back. Michael Porter Jr. had the COVID thing, and he missed a huge stretch. He came back and then really was just up and down. Dude is on an absolute tear right now. And a big part of winning 7 out of the last 8 is that he is averaging 20-10 in the month of March. He's shooting 50% from 3 in the month of March. He pulled a Steph last night on his last 3 and turned around and spun back to the bench before the thing even went in. So he's feeling it right now.
Yep.
And like I said, he's not completely a black hole defensively. So it isn't 4-on-5 defensively when he is out on the floor. Jamal Murray is another guy. And this has been the knock on Jamal his entire career, has been that he's been inconsistent, that he has been up and down, that You know, for every marvelous night that he goes off for 37, he'll turn around and score 12 the next night and shoot, you know, 4 of 16 or some crap like that. He's starting to pull himself out of that. He's playing well on a nightly basis. He's not quite bubble Jamal Murray, but I think one thing we're starting to realize more and more is that the bubble was a bit of an anomaly. So it kind of makes sense. And this is just a young team. They really are still a pretty young team right now. You know, Jokic isn't even 27 yet at this point of his career. So they're still kind of starting to find their way a little bit. And right now, they're started settling into a rotation. Michael Malone, rotations just, they confuse him, man. He has a tough time figuring out what he's doing. He's kind of started to settle into a more secure rotation right now, even though Monte Morris is currently banged up at the moment. They got this little guy, Facu Campazzo. He's from Argentina, but they got him out of the Spanish league. And he's really helped solidify that second unit, both defensively and in terms of distributing the basketball. I think he had 8 assists last night. He's a really, really fun player. But more than anything, he's very dependable as a backcourt option with the second unit. So, your questions about Denver, the same questions that we've been asking here in town this entire friggin' season, really the entire Michael Malone tenure here in Denver. But you mentioned the schedule hadn't been easy. Well, the schedule is going to continue to be easy here for a little while. The first half schedule was pretty brutal on the Nuggets. They got a chance to really kind of make up some ground now here at this time. And I don't see a reason why they can't finish a top four seed in the West the way they're playing right now if they stay healthy.
And the Gary Harris point, I think, is a really important one, because if people don't remember, and you'll remember this, going back to the bubble, right, in the seeding games, they were atrocious defensively, especially along the perimeter. Barton and Harris were banged up. They weren't playing. All of a sudden, Harris comes back, and we know about the run that they make, and he was a really big part of that. So I'm curious. You know, I brought up the stat, right, 30th in rim defense. I think there's a couple of others, right, third most corner threes allowed, 21st in percentage defensively, 26th in transition defense. Do you foresee those things getting better once they get healthier, or is this going to be an issue for them into the postseason?
It all depends on what version of Gary Harris actually comes back, because there's two different things. There's being 100% and there's being the guy that was able to hobble his way back from injury. But their wing defense, everything that you just brought up right there was about athleticism and wing defense. It's atrocious, and it just has been for years. This is why, you know, the organization, They really went after Drew Holiday. In the end, Milwaukee just completely outbid everybody. This is why they've liked Bradley Beal, even though I don't think Washington is ever going to end up giving him up, and God knows what the cost of that would be. So what we have been waiting on, and I'll go back to that name again, is Michael Porter Jr. to figure it the hell out. And these last couple of weeks, he has. And, you know, we did this topic on our show yesterday here in Denver. Has Michael Porter Jr. arrived? Are we done saying, is it going to happen? Is it happening right now? Well, this stretch would suggest that it is. But we all like a bigger sample size. It all makes us feel better. That's what we're kind of waiting on right now. And, I mean, that dude with his length at 6'10", he has the athleticism to be able to hang with twos and threes defensively. It's just, Is he committed to it? Is he paying attention to it? Is he focused on it? Is he not? We crack a lot of jokes around here that nobody defends empty space on the floor better than Michael Porter Jr. It's find a body, dude. Well, he's doing some of that. And a lot of that is just the assistant coaching staff, I know, has spent an ungodly amount of time with him in the film room, just hammering on him what he needs to do. Look, they're never going to be an elite defensive team. They're not even going to be close to that with this current group, but they can at least be passable, and how good they are offensively makes them dangerous enough.
Right. I mean, look, they're still cleaning the glass, sorts out all the garbage time minutes and blowouts and stuff. They're still 12th in defensive efficiency. You know, that's what I like about conversations like this, is I think people on the surface are like, what are you quibbling about? They're 12th. They're top defense. So in reality, there's little things that can get exploited. So as we watch them improve, and I do think Harris is a massive part of that. So you've been alluding to a couple of things. Let me ask you, we're about a week away from the trade deadline. There have been a lot of reports out there hovering around the Nuggets. There was one report that they were sniffing around P.J. Tucker. Ultimately, he gets dealt to Milwaukee. But one name that I was reading, Aaron Gordon from Orlando. What do you think the reality is of that, and what do you think would be the package?
The name keeps coming up. Absolutely. The question there is, and this is always the tricky thing with the Nuggets, is are they overvaluing their own guys? Because they have been very guilty of that in the past. In fact, there was a number of deals that were potentially on the table in recent years in which Gary Harris was included. And now, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, we're looking back and going, damn, should have just pulled the trigger on one of those. I do think they would love to move Will Barton if they could. And he would probably have to be a part of any deal that would go down just to make salaries match up. I think Aaron Gordon would be a perfect complement for what this group currently is. You know, it's you can push Paul Millsap to the bench. You can use MPJ more in a three, more in a wing type of role. Use Aaron Gordon as a perfect off ball kind of power forward. Plus, that's the kind of dude as an above the rim player like. Jokic needs to be able to play with a guy like that. And Porter kind of is becoming that, but Jokic needs to be able to throw some more lobs. And Aaron Gordon's the kind of guy that can absolutely go and do that. I don't know how realistic it is because I'm starting to get beaten down on my hopes that the Nuggets are going to pull the trigger on a really, really meaningful trade. They just kind of love being team consistency, team run back with the Nuggets. But I think Aaron Gordon would be just perfect with this team.
Yeah, well, the tough part for them is, like, the trade market's really not that great, right? Like, where the names are getting thrown out there are Aaron Gordon, Kyle Lowry's out there, right? Like, the George Hill. Like, none of these guys are really going to be massive pieces that really swing the pendulum one way or the other. So, you mentioned Barton. There was another report 76ers called about Will Barton. So, it sounds like Barton's probably on his last legs there in Denver if they can find a deal, huh?
Yeah, there's been there's a lot that goes into that. And there has been some frustration on the part of Will of he wants to be a starter. It's that old NBA thing. He wants to start. He doesn't want to have to come off the bench. So there obviously is that little bit of complication right there. He's got a player option next season at $14.7 million going into his age 30 season. It'll be really interesting to see if he wants to pick that up or not. Will Barton is the most polarizing basketball player in this town. He's been on fire lately. He scored over 24 consecutive games. So offensively, he's been very good. He is also prone to moments of what we will call lack of focus, some brain dead turnovers every now and then, bad shot selection. But he's also a guy that when he gets going is one of the most dependable scorers on the team. And so with Will Barton, the only answer right there, and I think Michael Malone has kind of resigned himself to it a little bit, is just like you got to live with the bad with Will. You live with the bad and then you take the good because right now, like his scoring ability is, you know, with the emergence of Porter definitely drops him to a number four scoring option on the team. But still, that's not nothing. That's something you need to depend on. Tim Connolly, the GM of the Nuggets, loves Will. Loves Will. You know, Will's a Baltimore guy. Tim's a Baltimore guy. They go way back. There's a lot of affection there. Will Barton's a great story. You know, he was a forgotten dude up in Portland, even though, you know, every day in practice, you know, Lillard and McCollum were just like, why doesn't this guy play more? Like, this guy can flat out fill it up. And he got to Denver. He got himself a big old contract, you know, $53 million, got himself paid. He's a great story. He kind of came from nowhere as an NBA player. But, you know, at $13.7 million and being a starter the way that he is, he's a player you absolutely have to depend on. And he is a dude that when it's good, it's good. And when it's bad, it is just bang your head against the wall bad with Will Barton. And hard to see much of a future there. If they can move him for salary purposes, he's the guy to move.
So big picture-wise, we saw them go toe-to-toe with a lot of these Western Conference powers, but they had a really big win. It was like a month ago when, after a road trip, they beat the crap out of the Utah Jazz. We've seen the highs and lows against all these teams. So where are you at big picture-wise with this Nuggets team in terms of competing with the championship? I made the case the other day, I think, and I haven't checked the standings this morning after last night's results, I think they would be in a 4-5 matchup with the Clippers, and I don't think they would hate that at this point.
No, I think they like that matchup. I think they would be really confident in all that. Look, the Clippers absolutely choked last year. They melted down something miserable. But that's what's funny about it is I actually don't hate this place where the Nuggets are currently in the schedule because, number one, they've beaten the Clippers, so mentally they have that edge. Number two, if they win that series, they would play Utah. And I know the Jazz are great, but Nikola Jokic eats Rudy Gobert for lunch. Yep. He destroys that dude. And Jamal Murray will go toe-to-toe with Donovan Mitchell. Look, they shoot unbelievably well. But for whatever reason, the Nuggets also shoot. They're not going to stop Utah from raining threes, but they will shoot and go toe-to-toe with them. I love that matchup. I think that's a series the Nuggets can win. So, quite frankly, I like where they are in the seedings right now a hell of a lot more than being a two or a three and having to go play Phoenix or L.A. So, right now, give me this. I think the Nuggets are perfectly in the place where they want to be for the matchups that they could get. Not saying that they will win those series. I'm saying they can win those series, and they can be a Western Conference Finals team if they get the Clippers and the Jazz.
All right, before we get you out of here, I have a 66-1 ticket on the Denver Broncos to win the Super Bowl next year, all based on the fact that they might go get Deshaun Watson. How realistic is this, or am I actually going to go into the season with Drew Lock as my quarterback with a 66-1 ticket on the Broncos?
Yeah, we're like probably 95% stuck with Drew Lock is my guess right now. Like maybe, I don't know, maybe they acquire like a Mitchell Trubisky or an Alex Smith or something like that to complement the room. We're starting to lose a little bit of hope. Look, Watson, you know, Michael Lombardi said the other day that he thinks it's still Denver and San Francisco is the preferred destinations. Now, the Deshaun Watson news this week is, I can't believe that that story got more bizarre, but somehow it absolutely has. The allegations are very serious. Also, some of the news regarding this particular attorney that is bringing these lawsuits is weird and bizarre, and God only knows what's going on right now with Deshaun Watson. I can tell you this. If they can swing a deal, I think they're going to try to. I think George Payton, their new GM, knows that they're going to make a splash. They absolutely have to make a splash right now. They tried to get in on Matthew Stafford. It's obvious that they don't love Drew Lock. They went to Trey Lance's pro day, so it's obvious that they don't like Drew Lock, and yet we might just have to settle and be stuck with Drew Lock. And if that's the case, then, yeah, just set that ticket on fire.
Yep, well, it's digital, so I can't really set it on fire, but we all know how to say it. Nate Kreckman, host again, Nate Kreckman and Lindahl, Altitude Sports Radio, 92.5 FM out in Denver. Nate, we really appreciate the time, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah, JBT, you're the man. I appreciate it, dude.